from Isaiah chapter 9. The people who walk in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in a land of deep shadows, on them a light has shined. Maybe it's happened to you. You've had what scholars, teachers, theologians, cartoonists call a light bulb experience. You're going through the day-by-dayness of ordinary life, and all of a sudden, the light goes on, and you get it. It being something you apparently need to get. A light bulb, as if it occurs, gives you an insight. Sometimes the light bulb goes on in moments of high drama. It was a year and a month ago that a close friend lost the battle to cancer for us. And 6 months after that, almost to the day, another close friend learned that he would be fighting that same fight. And there are people for whom we have prayed today that are in that same situation. And often as not, especially if the news is especially dire and the outcome seemingly bleak, it gives us the insight to seize the day, that roses need to be smelled, that people need to be cherished, that time is short. And in the midst of deliberate or sudden devastating loss, the light goes on. And perhaps, for at least a bit, we cherish the people we love a little bit more and relax about things that drive us nuts a little bit less. Seize the day when the insight comes that time is short. So also, and I think we even can orchestrate, in effect, light bulb experiences. We did that on Christmas Eve or our candlelight service, where at the very end of the worship experience, we dimmed the lights and lit candles. And for just a moment, it became clear that the warmth and the fellowship and these lights give us hope. Not unlike the experience at Kathy and Randall's wedding last week. They dimmed the lights on purpose before the wedding started. And the room of this size was illuminated only by candles along the side and in front with Christmas lights over an archway. It was dark in there except for the soft light, which was light enough to illuminate the love these two people had. And by metaphor again, the light that enlightens all of us as to the power and goodness of love and the prevalence and the prevailing of hope. These, again, are moments where the light kind of goes off. But I think more often than not, the day-by-dayness of life makes these illuminations less clear. And sometimes we even look for experts to enlighten us or illuminate us. The self-help section at Barnes & Noble is one of the most prolific of all the books. Help me figure this out. Help me do this. We're looking for the light switch to give us an insight, and we find ourselves living our lives in the quest for that. In response to what seems the often futility of that endeavor, I want to read a fairly lengthy essay by Anna Quinlan, who's a columnist for Newsweek magazine and also the author of several quite good novels, and I would certainly recommend her work. But this especially, it's simply an essay on parenthood, which I think illuminates many things directly and metaphorically. She begins, "If not for the photographs, I might have a hard time believing they ever existed. The pensive infant with the swipe of dark bangs and the black button eyes of a Raggedy Ann doll. The placid baby with the yellow ringlets and the high piping voice. The sturdy toddler with the lower lip that curled into an apostrophe over her chin. All my babies are gone now. I say this not in sorrow, but in disbelief. I take great satisfaction in what I have today, 3 almost adults, 2 taller than I am, 1 closing in fast. 2 three people who read the same books I do and have learned not to be afraid of disagreeing with me in their opinion of them, who sometimes tell vulgar jokes that make me laugh until I choke and cry, who need razor blades and shower gel and privacy, who want to keep their doors closed more than I like, who miraculously go to the bathroom, zip up their jackets, and move food from plate to mouth all by themselves, like the trick soap I bought for the bathroom with the rubber ducky at its center. The baby is buried deep within each, barely discernible, except through the unreliable haze of the past. Everything in all the books I once pored over is finished for me now. Penelope Leach, T. Barry Brazelton, Dr. Spock. The ones on sibling rivalry and sleeping through the night and early childhood education, all grown obsolete, along with Goodnight Moon and Where the Wild Things Are. They are battered, spotted, well used. But I suspect that if you flip the pages, dust would rise like memories. What these books taught me finally, and what the women on the playground taught me, and the well-meaning relations, what they taught me was that they couldn't teach me very much at all. Raising children is presented at first as a true-false test, then becomes multiple choice, until finally far along you realize it is an endless essay. No one knows anything. One child responds well to positive reinforcement, another can be managed only with a stern voice and a timeout. One child is toilet trained at 3, his sibling at 2. When my first child was born, parents were told to put baby to bed on his belly so that he would not choke on his own spit. By the time my last arrived, babies were put down on their backs because of research on sudden infant death syndrome. To a new parent, this ever-shifting certainty is terrifying and then soothing. Eventually, you must learn to trust yourself. Eventually, the research will follow. I remember 15 years ago poring over one of Dr. Brazelton's wonderful books on child development, in which he describes three different sorts of infants: average, quiet, and active. I was looking for a sub-quiet codicil for an 18-month-old who did not walk. Was there something wrong with his fat little legs? Was there something wrong with his tiny little mind? Was he developmentally delayed, physically challenged? Was I insane? Last year he went to China. Next year he goes to college. He can talk just fine. He can walk too. Every part of raising children is humbling. Believe me, mistakes were made. Where have they all been enshrined? The Remember When Mom Did This Hall of Fame. The outbursts, the temper tantrums, the bad language, mine, not theirs. The times the baby fell off the bed. The times I arrived late for preschool pickup. The nightmare sleepover. The horrible summer camp. The day when the youngest came barreling out of the classroom with a 98 on her geography test, and I responded, "What did you get wrong?" She insisted I include that. The time I ordered food at the McDonald's drive-thru speaker and then drove away without picking it up. They all insisted I include that. I did not allow them to watch The Simpsons for the first 2 seasons. What was I thinking? But the biggest mistake I made is the one that most of us make while doing this. I did not live in the moment enough. This is particularly clear now that the moment is gone, captured only in photographs. There's one picture of the three of them sitting on the grass on a quilt in the shadow of a swing set on a summer day, ages 6, 4, and 1. And I wish I could remember what we ate and what we talked about and how they sounded and how they looked when they slept that night. I wish I'd not been in such a hurry to get on to the next thing, dinner, bath, book, bed. I wish I had treasured doing a little more and getting it done a little less. Even today, I'm not sure what worked and what didn't, and what was me and what was simply life. When they were very small, I suppose I thought someday they would become who they were because of what I had done. Now I suspect they simply grew into their true selves because they demanded in a thousand ways that I back off and let them be. The book said to be relaxed, and I was often tense, matter of fact, and I was sometimes over the top. And look how it all turned out. I wound up with the three people I like best in the world, who've done more than anyone to excavate my essential humanity. That's what the book never told me. I was bound and determined to learn from the experts. It took me a while to figure out who the experts were. It's not about looking for light switches. It's about paying attention to the lights that are always there. The wise men found the baby under a light in Bethlehem. The light of that star is always on. It always shines over the place where there is a child of God and illuminates the wonder and the mystery, the terror, the fear, ultimately the love that God has for us and that we are capable of experiencing with each other. The light is always on over the place where you are and with the people who are there with you. And you catch a glimmer of that light in the eyes of the one who looks at you and sighs or rolls their eyes and says, "Not again," or, "Really?" You don't need to look for the light. You simply need to bask in the glow of it the next time you tell a joke or extend forgiveness or make amends or share a meal. It is the light of the love that never goes away, that never goes out, and that can only be experienced in the sharing. So the next time you feel kin to the people who walk in darkness, and we will, catch a glimmer of the light in the eyes of those who share the experience with you. Let the experience be. Cherish it. And grow. And know how deeply the God who created us all loves us still, and endures and grows and gives us peace and hope. Epiphany. Amen.